Welcome to In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, and that means it is time for our weekly visit with the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds Granville and Lanark District Health Unit, Dr. Lena Lee. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And joining us also, Danielle Labonte, who is a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist. Now, first question for you, Danielle, am I saying your last name properly?
Yep, you've got it.
All right, perfect. Well, welcome to In Focus, Danielle. We're going to get to you in just a couple of minutes, but thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Dr. Lee, let's get right to it. And this is one of those things, you know, we half joke. We love having you on the air. Don't take what I'm about to say to go against that whatsoever. But you haven't got much to tell us this week, which is a good thing because that means that things could be possibly going okay.
Yeah, it's funny because there's so much tentativeness and reverence on this thought of like, are things going okay? How confident can we feel? How reassured? Almost a sense of guilt. Are we taking it too easy or are we not taking it seriously enough? And so really, I think this week the big takeaway is things are going okay for sure. We seem to be having not so many cases of COVID-19. Now it still is sort of within that season of recovery from the holidays. I know I myself am still recovering a little bit from the holidays, and so our data are also recovering a little bit, and so we don't have that complete data for COVID-19 yet, but so far so good. It looks like we have not a huge amount of transmission as a result of the holidays. Now, I should say as a caveat that in other parts of the province, we are seeing some rise. There's some early indications of so the wastewater and the outbreak numbers are looking to be rising a little bit, but some of the other numbers are staying pretty steady. And so we'll keep an eye on that for the coming week or two. In non-COVID-19 respiratory transmission, though, things are actually looking pretty steady. Our flu transmission rates have come down, and that is being seen across the region, across the Eastern Ontario region. And we're seeing that across the province as well. And so that's really, really reassuring that our flu numbers, it seems that Ontario may be over the worst of that section. Now we do still have some transmission, but not so much. And then for other respiratory viruses, we are seeing steady transmission of those, perhaps even some rise. So that's RSV, enterorhinovirus, human metapneumovirus, and seasonal coronaviruses, which are not related to COVID-19. Those seem to be transmitting and may be rising a little bit. And again, it's one of those things where they do cause the cold in some small number of people. They can cause severe outcomes as well. So overall, I would say things are looking steady. We'll give it another week to see if there really is any effect from the holidays, but I'm cautiously optimistic. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's good. That's great to hear. And certainly this is what we need when it comes to, and again, I know you don't have anything to do with the hospitals, but with them being overwhelmed, anytime that they can hear that these numbers are going down, that is a good thing. And then that means that we likely wouldn't see as many ER closures and things like that. So there's so many different factors at play, aren't there, doctor?
Yeah, and we are seeing in the numbers a little bit less of ER visits, which is indeed reassuring. And I'm sure for our hospital colleagues, a little bit of not being so red hot in the workload and the number of people and how many people are really in a bad way and seeking care. I'm sure that's a relief for them as well.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about things. I don't know if slowing down is the right term, maybe sort of leveling off, because we look at the numbers that came out just Tuesday. Sadly, there was another death related to COVID-19 reported. The number of hospitalizations, the ICU numbers were up a bit, but just by little ticks here and there, we seem to be around that same area. We're really looking forward to seeing that those numbers just sort of drop off the table.
Well, I don't know about dropping off the table. Setting realistic expectations. I do think that down the road, what we're going to be seeing is, I think we've talked about it here as well in the past, is rising and falling transmission of COVID-19, not necessarily tethered to the seasons, the way that we see for other respiratory viruses, but then also keeping in mind that other respiratory viruses do transmit. And so I would imagine that we'll see more hospitalizations, unfortunately, more deaths. But what I'm really looking out for is whether there's really a drastic rise in cases, but much more so a drastic rise in hospitalizations or severe outcomes. That would be concerning. And then, of course, if there's new variants that have a different severity profile or a different transmission profile, that might be a cause for concern as well. We are having new variants, as we've talked about in previous weeks, but if it's a different name but a very similar sort of virus, then that's obviously less of a concern, and we can continue with the plans and the expectations that we currently have. But if things change, of course, our plans and expectations, of course, would change as well.
Interesting. Did you want to leave our listeners with anything else before we let you go? I know that you have to go off to yet another meeting. You're such a busy doctor.
Well, just to say that, things are reassuring. I think that is good. I'm not fully reassured. I'll feel better next week when we've had 2 weeks worth of post-holiday data. And also, thinking about non-respiratory season, non-respiratory virus elements of people's health, right? I think that's really important as well. I know I myself talk a lot about the respiratory season, but I am hoping that through this radio program broadcast and other ways that people in our region interact with the health unit, we can think about and talk about other parts of health more and more as well, and that's really important as well.
Excellent. Well, doctor, thank you so much. As you do every week, you provide a great service for our listeners, and we're so wonderfully happy to have you with us.
Thank you. See you guys next week.
You bet. Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health with the Leeds, Granville, and Lanark District Health Unit. And now we turn our attention to Danielle Labonte, who is the regis or a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist with the health unit. Danielle, thanks for hanging on through that with the doctor. And she talked a lot about, the new year. And as we're looking at new data and hopefully seeing things continue to show things on a positive front. But we also know that New Year's tend to be a great time for people to make resolutions. And one of them is certainly to do with our eating habits. So what do you think about these resolutions, people making these kind of proclamations at January 1st?
Yeah, for sure. There are times where changing our eating habits can be really helpful and definitely can improve our health. So thinking about things like increasing our vegetable and fruit intake, drinking more water, goals like that. However, in our society, it is often normalized to talk and think about food in a way that can really lead to people having a negative relationship with it and with our bodies overall. It's really common for weight and food to be linked together, specifically when we think about dieting as a way to change our bodies. And this can actually lead to disordered eating and eating disorders, among other negative outcomes. Just to kind of define the two, disordered eating and eating disorders, disordered eating is a term that includes a wide range of harmful eating behaviors, and this might not warrant an eating disorder diagnosis. Eating disorders are illnesses with specific and narrow criteria that healthcare practitioners could use to diagnose individuals.
All righty. So when we look at things as we move forward with these resolutions and so on, there are certainly some red flags to keep in mind when thinking about our eating habits, right?
Yeah, for sure. So things like leaving out entire food groups, so vegetables and fruits, grains, protein foods, if you're seeing those being left out, or recommending to leave one of those out, that's a red flag for sure. Ignoring our hunger cues, things like intermittent fasting, calorie restriction, villainizing certain foods. So we often hear people labeling foods as good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, calling foods junk food, things like that. And if you're feeling guilt around eating certain foods, these are really all signs that something might be leading you down the wrong path. So just something to be aware of.
So what can be done to combat all of this?
Yeah, so really we want to be mindful of the red flags that I mentioned and consider our own language that we use around food. So strive for neutral language when we can and call foods by their names. We don't need to be calling foods, you know, healthy, unhealthy, junk food, things like that. Just call them what they are. We can say I'm having a cookie, an apple, having some chips, broccoli, whatever it is. We also want to check our self-talk related to our own body image and relationship with food and avoid judging yourself and others based on what our food choices look like. This really can be challenging to get used to, but the more often you're able to reflect on this and kind of catch yourself, the easier it does become. It's also really helpful to be aware of the mindset of the people you surround yourself with. You know, it's helpful to have people who can support you through this process. So if they're on the same page, that's helpful. And you might need to set some boundaries with people who might be more triggering for you. So maybe certain topics have to be off limits, or maybe you just delay seeing them until you feel like you're in a better headspace yourself.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Now, another thing that people are talking about doing when they say, I'm going to get healthy this year is to get more physically active. Now, like eating, this is usually linked to wanting to change how our bodies look. So let's dive into this a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start off by acknowledging that really most people do not get enough physical activity in general. But really, we do want to avoid linking physical activity to changing the way our bodies look. Research actually shows that this can demotivate people and create a negative relationship with being active overall. So instead, we really want to think about being active for reasons aside from how we look. So think about things like our mental health, stress management, blood sugar control, heart and bone health, as well as building and maintaining strength, flexibility, mobility, and independence as we age.
So what are some strategies for setting physical activity goals with this in mind?
Yeah, creating goals for ourselves to increase our activity is beneficial, and this really can help us, you know, help lead us to more healthy habits and help us include more movement throughout our weeks. So including a variety of activities is also helpful. This improves our strength, flexibility, endurance, and helps with our mental health as well. It's recommended that adults get 2.5 hours of moderate to vigorous physical activity each week. And this can be in smaller chunks, so maybe, you know, small chunks of 10 minutes throughout your week, or you can do it in larger chunks less often, really. It's whatever works for you. It's also recommended that we do include some strength activities for our muscle and bone health at least twice a week. And some tips to help make this a habit includes scheduling it into your day. So maybe you do something every morning or certain days of the week. Being active with others can be really helpful. Maybe you're joining a class or you have a workout buddy that you like to, you know, do these things with. And then setting small achievable goals to work towards. So maybe it's just walking a little bit longer each time you go out for a walk. Maybe you're walking further or faster. Those are just some examples.
All right. Can you tell us about some misinformation related to nutrition and physical activity that's out there? Boy, I bet you there's a lot.
Yeah, there really is a lot. You know, in so many different places, there's tons of misinformation related to health. Some things to look out for are just kind of the general use of buzzwords that really lack a clear definition. So we often see words like toxins, cleansing, inflammation, immunity, clean eating, and then talking about chemicals versus natural. Usually these words are kind of being used to describe wellness overall. But in reality, this type of messaging is really vague and it's oversimplified and it's really challenging to link this to any scientific research. This often leads to inaccuracy, misunderstanding, and also unreasonable fears around, you know, this type of whatever it is this messaging's around. So things to think about are, you know, is the person trying to sell you something? A lot of the times when you look a little bit deeper, there's, you know, they're selling a book or they're selling a product. So that's something to consider. Is the research that they cite misleading? And, you know, who is this research done on? Is it done on humans? Is it done on animals and never been replicated in humans? That's definitely something to consider. Are the claims based on one or two research studies that aren't really supported by what most of the, you know, other research is saying? Were the studies peer reviewed? Is it an actual study or is it maybe it's just a hypothesis or an opinion piece? And does the study's conclusion support the message being shared? So it's really important to check the source. And are the author's credentials appropriate for the information that they're providing? So for example, if you're looking at nutrition advice, is it coming from a registered dietitian?
Okay. You know, this goes back to basically every bit of health research that people have done since COVID really thrust it into the spotlight. You know, people need to know where to go to get credible information. And obviously, when it comes to nutrition and physical activity, that is absolutely no exception. So maybe you can tell us, if people would like to take a look at this a little bit deeper, where they can go to get that credible information that they can actually believe.
Yeah, for sure. So for nutrition-related information, Dietitians of Canada and unlockfood.ca are really great resources. For physical activity-related information, Participaction is a great website. It's just participaction.com. Our Health Unit website does have a variety of information on different health topics as well. And Science Up First is a really good resource for debunking misinformation specifically.
Now, people are also, in addition to, you know, when it comes to nutrition and physical activity, they're also looking at their mental health. So maybe, I know we could go on for an hour about mental health and improving it, you know, over the course of a year. We could talk about it for hours on end, but maybe you can try to give us a bit of a brief synopsis here.
Yeah, so really when we're thinking about improving mental health from kind of a public health perspective, we consider all the different factors that could impact this. So things like physical activity and getting outside, eating, our relationship with food, getting enough sleep, and our ability to manage stress. These are just a few things that we always are thinking about. And it's really critical to acknowledge that not everyone has the necessary supports and resources to support them in improving their mental health. So for example, we do know that many households are experiencing food insecurity and are just unable to afford, you know, the healthy food that they need to stay well. And many people often work whenever they can just in order to make ends meet. This can result in difficulty managing their sleep, stress, and physical activity just due to the lack of time, energy, and overall resources.
So what can we do to help?
Yeah, so those of us who have the time, a voice, and a platform can really use this to advocate for those who do not. We really need to have those critical conversations with friends, family, colleagues, and policymakers wherever possible to try to make health equitable for all.
All right. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about the website, but if people would like to get more information on any of these topics, we know that the Health Unit's website at healthunit.org is awesome. There's a couple other places you can go to get information directly from the Health Unit, right?
Yeah. So you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter or give us a call at 1-800-660-5853.
Danielle, I want to thank you so much. Lots of great information in there. I know that this will not be our last conversation. It has been a pleasure to speak with you today on In Focus.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm Bob Perreault. We feature different parts of the Health Unit every Wednesday here on In Focus. Thanks so much for listening. We will catch up again with you tomorrow.